Thank you very much, Eric Stock. Susan Saunders here. I'm getting back into the New Year's schedule just like everybody else. I forgot to properly promote that we have on the first or on the second Tuesday of every month our favorite guest from the City of Bloomington Police Department, and that would be Bloomington Police Chief Brendan Hefner and Public Information Officer Sarah Mayer. Welcome back to WJBC. Happy 2017. Things going well?
Yes.
Yes? All right. That's a man who's been in court. Just answer with one word.
Sarah, Happy New Year to you.
Thank you very much. Sarah, you've also been on vacation. So how does a police officer relax? Do you just turn off all the media? Do you turn off all of the social media? I mean, how do you chill out?
I did this time, yes.
Yeah? And it was a good time had by all?
An excellent time. Thank you.
Do you sometimes find that you've got to travel far away so people don't see police officer first and they just see my friend Sarah Mayer?
I did travel far away. Maybe that was it. I don't know. But we had a very nice time.
Good, good. I'm glad to have you both back. For 2017, our first meeting, let's take a quick look back at 2016. I understand it was a really good year for DUI arrests.
You're quite conflicted when we talk about this because, yes, we actually had 300 DUI arrests in 2016, and we actually had an Officer Furman on our department who had over 100 DUI arrests himself, which is both amazing but then concerning that we continue to have individuals who drive intoxicated, putting everyone in danger. It's 100% preventable. And again, just encouraging people, please, you know, make a plan ahead of time before you go out and stick to the plan. Have a designated sober driver.
Was it still a bad night for New Year's Eve, even though that's probably the number one night people are supposed to think ahead? Don't drink and drive, Chief?
It was an active night. It was a busy night. But I can't think of anything, I guess, out of the ordinary for New Year's Eve. But to piggyback on what Sarah said, you know, when you drive DUI now, I mean, you know, that's pretty much a choice between a designated driver, between the many vehicles for hire that we have in the area. There's just really no excuse.
Well, it's a decision made when you're in your stupid head because you're already intoxicated. The good news that I saw was that at the Consumer Electronics Show that they just had in Vegas, where they come out with all kinds of gadgets that are supposed to improve your life, there apparently were a grand number of DUI preventative technologies being introduced. So you could have your own breathalyzer. You could have your own breathalyzer that also would try and tell you how long before you could drive again as an estimate based on exactly where you're at right now. And I saw in the new laws for 2017 that people who have more than one DUI on their record are now forever going to have to blow into a breathalyzer to start their car. Then it's not going to be just a limited scenario until you're off probation or until you're until those cases are done. So there's some new changes that are coming to try and prevent future DUIs, and some of them are going to be self-responsible.
Well, that's good, some of that technology, but you have to remember you just can't rely on some equipment that you purchase, because the ultimate is the breath analysis that we use to determine your blood alcohol level or the blood test. And just because we have technology, we see it now with distracted drivers. You still see people walking around with their phone in their hand in vehicles that I know have Bluetooth capabilities. So it's great to have the technology. It's great to, as you spoke about the other things as far as detecting your breath alcohol, that's an estimate. So if you were close, I would just dial it back or make arrangements. So it's good if you use it.
It would be helpful in awareness. Some people don't realize how quickly they are actually over the legal limit.
Yes. Absolutely.
And might help some bar owners as well, you know, to say, hey, we can't use this in a court of law, but here I can prove to you this is why I'm stop serving you, because you're over.
And people need to be aware also, prescription drugs, they need to adhere to the directions that are on the prescription medications, because we get that also. And they are a danger on the road, too. If you're, you know, you're impaired, it's not just alcohol.
When it comes to traffic arrests, I'm just going to ask for my own knowledge. I have just personally witnessed a large number of people running red lights. And when I say running a red light, we're not talking, hey, it just went from yellow to red. We're talking a count of three and then going through intersections. Have you noticed any uptick in that, or is there any preventative besides being a defensive driver and checking every direction before you pull out into an intersection? Because it seems like the problem is rising.
I'll say I have noticed it as well, and you're like, where's the police officer when I need it, right? I'm off duty at that time. But I think, you know, we need to put responsibility back on people. You know, if you're running late, allow more time. You put everybody in danger when you run red lights, especially, you know, we've got during the morning hours, you've got kids going to school, people getting to work, and it really is responsibility on some citizens to adhere to the red lights.
Is it – okay, I honestly called 911 after witnessing – an accident right in front of me. It was late at night. My husband and I were on the way home, so I wasn't driving, so I could call 911 on behalf of a couple of drivers that had really crashed. I could see before we left, because we pulled over into a parking lot because we were going to try and offer assistance, but both drivers had gotten out of the vehicle and seemed to be civil to one another, even though one vehicle had definitely run the red light and caused the accident. When I called 911 because they were going to need emergency assistance in a variety of ways at that intersection, I specifically reported to the 911 operator who was at fault, gave my name, and gave my number. Police Chief Brendan Heffner, is that something that can be used for the police officer who's going to be coming forth and deciding how to write the ticket?
Well, if you leave your name and number, yes, that could be, but we still need to get a actual statement from you that could be used in court. So just calling it in. If you were to just call it in and leave, and we didn't know who you were and had no way to contact you, that would work in the victim driver's detriment. So if you do something like that, I would ask that you wait in a safe area and let dispatch know where you'll be so the officer could get in touch with you.
Okay, because in my head I assumed, all right, if I've called 911 and they asked for my name and I gave it and they said, can we have your number? And I said, sure, here you go. I thought that was enough.
Well, that's better than nothing.
Yes.
But it's very helpful to have the witnesses remain on scene so we can get all the information.
Okay.
Because I can tell you from personal experience, multiple times you'll have conflicting stories. You have one driver say one thing and another driver say another. No, well, my light was green too. And that independent witness is a lot of times extremely helpful. And then the appropriate citations can get issued.
Okay, so I would have done a better good deed if I had stayed behind to say, hey, I was a witness. Because I would hope somebody would do that for me if I was involved in the accident so the ticket could be written properly. Because the person that ran the red light put all of us in danger, and I could have just as easily been hit as the person who was hit. So that's new laws. Now, Chief, I'll ask, are there new laws in 2017 that you have specifically instructed Bloomington police officers to be watching for that could end up with a ticket?
Well, when we get the new laws, we disseminate it out to all the officers. But one law that will obviously be near and dear to our hearts and also fire personnel is that an expansion of the Scott's Law, where you are to slow down and pull over when at all possible when there's a police officer on a traffic stop. This now applies to people who are broken down. So someone changing a tire, somebody having some other kind of mechanical issue on a roadway, you're supposed to do the same thing.
Okay. If I am in the right-hand lane in a four-lane highway, for example, and the person is broken down on the median, there's a lot of traffic, I can't get over into the left lane, but I try and slow down as much as possible. But sometimes you see that accident or that incident, you've been going 70 miles an hour. Now all of a sudden you're trying to slow down without getting hit from behind. There's a judgment call in that, is there not?
Yes. Yes, there's definitely a judgment call. And I mean, if you've made the effort, if you slow down and, you know, there is traffic, that definitely helps a lot. But, you know, if there are two lanes clear and you just whiz by, or you just slow down and you still go by people, I mean, unless you've been out there and working and had somebody like barely miss you, you just really don't understand how dangerous it is. And we still, with the exception, unfortunately, of last year, had more officers killed in traffic crashes.
How are you going to actually enforce that? Because sometimes you only have one officer that's able to come to the scene and pull over, then who's going to be enforcing the Scott's Law? You would need extra eyes.
Well, it just depends. I mean, if you know, oftentimes we can just pull over so somebody has space to be able to change a tire or do whatever safely, and if somebody just comes right by us, I mean, you know, if we're there with our lights on, it's going to be on video.
Mm-hmm.
So we just have it. And, you know, we have places. So there's things that we can do. Is it something we do it when we can? State police, they do it when they can. You know, I've been out there. It's not the easiest one, but it most certainly saves lives, and that's why we have it. That's why it's on the books.
I'm glad to know that video can actually slow down enough to be able to identify the car of the culprit that's driving by, because some of those cars are going by pretty darn quick. All right, it is a new year, and we've got new things to talk about with the Bloomington Police Chief Brendan Heffner, Public Information Officer Sarah Mayer. Let's take a short break, and then we'll come back, and we'll ask, hey, are we moving into that substation anytime soon? We'll find out after this.
See news. Search WJBC on Facebook.
922 weather forecast today includes rain and a wind advisory. WMBD meteorologist Lauren Rainson says a high of 49 today. I always worry about the high-profile vehicles when it's a windy day. You don't realize your camper, your semi-truck, whatever you've got that's driving high is going to get shoved around on the road. And if I'm not a high-profile vehicle and I'm driving next to one of those, you got to be careful as well. And garbage cans, hold on tight. 922, and second Tuesday of the month, we have in Bloomington Police Chief Brendan Heffner, Public Information Officer Sarah Mayer, talking about the hot topics that are happening in the police department. And I just want an update from you, Chief. What is our ETA on doing something with the substation? I know everybody's had their say, and there's been quite a number of conversations about it. But you mentioned to me last time, you can, you know, pretty much put people in there anytime you want to, can't you?
Well, I just want to be clear. It has never been about adding more personnel to that area just simply because there was a substation. And first of all, we've kind of changed the name. It's going to be the West Jefferson Community House.
Okay.
Because it is a collaborative partnership with Mid-Central Community Action. So we cleared up some of those things at the focus meeting last week. And City Council, it will be presented to them again on January 23rd. And at that time, they will vote on moving on with this community house. And it has never been about adding more people, keeping personnel there, making it, i.e., another police department. It is a place for officers to eat, do reports, good weather, they can get out and walk and meet some of the residents, or the residents can come there and talk to them. People will be coming there to talk to Mid-Central. We plan on having cookouts. We've already, with Mid-Central, gave out Christmas presents right before Christmas. We gave out candy around Halloween. Those are the type of things we're going to be doing. It's a way for us to engage the community more so we get to know them more and they get to know that. And hopefully the ripple effect of that could be reducing some of the crime in that area, mm-hmm. which has historically been a area for us where we have a lot of calls for service, not just this year. And what people didn't realize is that Mid-Central, for lack of better words, is driving this bus. They have grants, and there's certain criteria that they have to meet. So they had done surveys over there about needs, and they talked about residents expressed the need for police presence and other things. They had asked me two times about having an officer live in a home. We didn't have one who wanted to do that. But I will tell you, at a couple focus meetings I had, there was residents over there who asked me specifically about a substation, and mm-hmm. you know, that was just not in the financial stratosphere for us at the time. We have a lot of things, but you know, for $12
we can
work this out, and I always say, what do we have to lose? Because we're trying to do something. We're trying to do something that's different, that hasn't been done, and amongst the other things that we do, we're always trying to reduce crime for our citizens and also put ourselves in a better light with people who may be confused about our role in society.
But let me just ask you a what if. If it was a different world and we did have a substation in that area, do you think it would have eliminated any of the recent crime that's happened in that area? Because we did have an uptick at the end of the year in gun violence and shootings that were happening very close to where your now community center is going to be. If it had been a substation at that time, do you think it would have made a difference?
If I had a crystal ball, I'd be able to tell you. One thing that I always tell people, and I think I've said it in here before, we can never measure what we deter. But in major cities, that's why you have police officers show up at different times, because we aren't on a schedule, because people who want to do wrong like to know your schedule. But our presence in and of itself is a deterrent. So while I could not guarantee anything, I would think that would have some impact, just us being there. And that's what we want to do. And that's not out just – I mean, trust me, if there's people to arrest, that's what we're going to do. But, you know, at the malls, at other places where we go, you know, our presence makes a difference.
It does. I drive a lot safer on the roads if I've got a cruiser next to me.
People who may want to do wrong, who may be coming to the area to do wrong, they will notice that. They take note of that. And, you know, I was asked, well, what happens if crime goes down there and it moves somewhere else? We will address it. And I always tell people when I do neighborhood walks over there, and I would say anywhere, you do not have to accept crime. You do not have to just accept drug dealing, gangs, and these other things. If you help us, it's a collaborative effort. We can reduce some things, and we have.
When they say the community needs to be involved, the true statement is the community needs to communicate and be honest about who's doing what and where they're doing it, and find a safe way to express that information without feeling like they're going to be labeled as a snitch, correct?
Right. Well, the trust factor. If people don't like you, then they're not going to talk to you. But maybe if we sat down and talked about sports or just talked about anything and just had casual conversations, or you've enlightened us on a couple issues going on and we handle it, then maybe when that trust starts building up, when something unfortunate occurs, it won't be the first time we've met when we do a neighborhood canvas or something of that nature, and hopefully they'll be more forthcoming and passing along that information to us, and we can handle things in a confidential manner when needed. You know, I hope that, well, first of all, I hope there are no serious incidents, but, you know, I would hope that sometimes, because I'm going to have detectives go over there, because when we have these events, you can meet different people, that maybe the first time you meet somebody isn't when we're doing a neighborhood canvas. Because when things go wrong, we're the ones out there.
When things go wrong, we need police officers to be able to respond. And Officer Mayor, you had a large number of retirees that you were celebrating last year. And you have some new police officers on the force. Who are we introducing to the BPD?
We have four new officers that just graduated from the Illinois State Police Academy, and they are not on the road yet, but they will be soon starting their field training program. And I will say, this was the first time where I actually looked and I thought, I'm getting old when I actually saw these individuals. But it's great. I mean, they are excited to serve our community, and they want to make a difference. That's why they got into law enforcement. So,
but even with those four additions, we still have some slots to fill, correct, Chief? How many officers are we down right now?
I believe we're down six.
And yet you just got done with testing, one part of the process of the written test of trying to get some new officers out there. Did you have a good crop of people apply?
We ended with approximately 220, and we were pleasantly surprised with that. We had changed some things, and so we are pleasantly surprised. We are still in the written test process. That's going on this week. Next month will be the physical agility. Then after that, we'll look at it, interviews, and from there. So
last question before we go to news here, because I'm sorry we're running out of time. I could talk to you both forever. When you do have new officers that are showing up for their first day of work, what's your best piece of advice that you give out first, officer? Chief Hefner.
First of all, it's a very rewarding job. And we are here to help people. We're going to help way more people than we will ever arrest. And integrity is paramount. As long as you're doing your best, you're going to make a mistake sometimes. And you have to own it. And as long as they understand that and understand that integrity is paramount in this job, they'll do fine.
Thank you very much. Bloomington Police Chief Brendan Hefner, Public Information Officer Sarah Mayer. We'll see you again here next month on WJBC.